Unless you... Where's my... Push! Ouch!
Yo! All right. That's one for Renee Willick. I guess I better not give the introduction for Renee Willick. Okay. All right. Kay Burke. Kenneth Burke. On the Faculty of English at this university this year as the Fanny Hurst Visiting Professor. Well, the most part of Mr. Burke's work, as you're aware, is in literary criticism and the study of the ways of language in general. And I could, as an introducer, properly recite the list of the titles of his works along these lines, but Mr. Burke and I got together earlier and agreed that this introduction is under no circumstances to last more than 40 minutes, with, of course, a question period. And anyhow, as a demonstration of his philosophical and critical works, and along with, he has written fictions in both prose and verse, and it is his poetry we are to hear on the present occasion. He called one volume of it a book of moments, and that's a kind of description and key to the art. The problem in some of the poems is how much of the road from nothing to everything, or the other way too, can be eternized in a single moment if you are still to emerge with something. There's a wonderful image on the dust jacket of his collected poems, which I've already said it was wonderful. I suspect he designed it himself. It starts like a spiral nebula from nowhere, and it fades over the edge of the page into the silence, is entirely composed of words. Alternatively, the objects of his poetry are the six biblical characteristics he set forth when he tried, poor fellow, to write a novel. Decided he couldn't write a real novel, the kind with plot, so he invented something he liked better. It had these six biblical characteristics: lamentation, rejoicing, beseechment, admonition, sayings, and invective. And I'm permitted to give you one example before his voice is not as good as mine. It's called Creation Myth. In the beginning there was universal nothing, then nothing said no to itself, and thereby begat something which called itself yes. Then no and yes, cohabiting, begat maybe. Next, all three in a menage a trois begat guilt. And guilt was of many names: mine, thine, yours, ours, his, hers, its, theirs, and order. In time, things so came to pass that two of its names, guilt and order, honoring their great progenitors, yes, no, and maybe, begat history. Finally, history fell a-dreaming and dreamed about language. And that brings us to critics who write critiques of critical criticism, which in turn brings us to
I should first tell you my both to Mr. Do we need this thing? I hate those things. I like to speak to you. I don't like these damn machines. Can we put that off? Can I talk to you out here just like, can't we? No? Can't be done? Can't be done? Can't be done. Okay. This is progress. This is progress. I don't know. But I would like to, first then, I would like to say, now, does it come back of it? Do I have to talk low or something? I don't know. You see, I don't know how to You know, I've been living for a year. I don't know how to do these damn things, you know. They messed me up.
I'll take it away for you.
You take it away.
Yeah, but I don't quite figure out how to do it.
Right, that's what I love.
It's a way, okay?
Thank you, friend. Now, can you hear me? Of course, I have one great, both grateful to Howard Nemiroff, and I am absolutely so against him in one way, and that is that a poet, you say critic every goddamn year. Now, Howard's half and half. A critic has to go, or he has to do every year. He either has to, everything he does, he has to be a New Deal, or at least he has to make it look like a New Deal. But I realized what the racket that poets have, and that is one day I had put over a deal that they had offered me a job at a certain place where they gave me so much, and I said I will do add $200 and I will give a poetry reading. So I put this deal over between the poetry reading. As a matter of fact, that particular poem, I'm going to read it to you tonight, is worth $2,200 now. by that method. But the trick is that you have this what these fellows can do. These poets can do. You know, I mean, here you are, you're in your 70s, you're falling apart. Every damn, if you said something last year, they said, look, the guy said, my God, he said, the guy, what he said that last year, you're done. When I put this deal over, you see, then in the evening session, which was my theoretical talk. You see, I was my critical talk. I was to give. I'd given the poetry session in the afternoon, and so in the evening talk. Now we ask for questions. And somebody got up and said, would you please read again that poem you read this afternoon? And I realized what the poets have on us, poor critics. What the God, how can we play that way? Thank God. So I'm just working like hell. I don't want poetry. Anyhow, but I'd like to first just read the poem that has that sort of angle. The poem was in here, heavy, what hangs over. Remember that old thing, that heavy, what hangs over? Or soup, fine, or super fine. At 80 reading lines, he wrote at 20. The storm now passed. A gust in the big tree splatters raindrops on the roof. That makes sense to you? I mean, that's, you know, you ever imagine this big storm going on, and the storm going on its way, and then after it's all over, it's all through, and then a little wind goes out in the direction. Well, you know, these fellows that they can sell their poems at the age of 17, and I'm going to sell mine at the age of 17 tonight. Yes, I will try to sell mine. I will write you some poems that I have written at the age of 17. But I want to present my major number. The rhetoricians tell me that your attention span is best at the beginning of a talk. So I'm going to read my long poem at the beginning of this talk. And it has to do with situation that I think you might be interested in, over and above. I mean, I'm trying to work this both ways. I'm trying to both read a poem and talk the kind of things that you might be interested in. Just as even if I were just giving a lecture. And that is that I think that we have a kind of problem like this in this poem. I was immobilized in Brooklyn at this time because my wife happened to be physically immobilized, and I was I was psychically immobilized. So we sat over in this place in Brooklyn, looking over from Brooklyn Heights, looking over in the southern, at the end of Manhattan Island there. And half of it was the bay, and half of it was the end of Manhattan Island. And there's no question about it, I was insomniac, I would be up 3-4 o'clock in the morning. That place was just blazing, incredible, all night. And that was exactly the same place, though, in Brooklyn Heights, where Brooklyn Ferry, where Whitman had gone across, and there was the bridge still there, Hart Crane's Bridge. Poor Hart Crane's business now is all gone, and that's all cleared up. Well, of course, the Brooklyn Ferry is not any longer there. And Hart Crane's, that area that he lived on, that very street that I was living on, that's all Jehovah's Witnesses now. It is. That worked at never angle. So I build from that. I build the notion. Get the structure of this before we start. And this poem is, here I am. There are three stages. Here is where Whitman crossed on the ferry from this. It was the same area, same place from there. He went back, but that's all gone. And there's the bridge where Hart went across. And here was I, or let's say here was the writer, who was immobilized because his companion was immobilized. His companion was immobilized physically, so he was immobilized psychologically. So all he could do was look across, you see. So the thing is called eye crossing from Brooklyn to Manhattan. And it's built that way. Now in this picture, in this story that I tell, after the poem came out, I was asked to say who was the Olympian leper that I referred to, and why was he a leper? I said he was Olympian because he was a man who transcended his physical problems. He was really a transcendent, and he was a leper because he was a leper. And that was Remy de Gourmont. And a poet, a critic, a thinker, if any of you have never ever met Remy de Gourmont, you've just been robbed. He was the beauty of his ways of dealing with all these problems. So when I refer to the Olympian leper in this poem, I am referring to Remy de Gourmont. The poem is dedicated to Marion Moore. Marion Moore was one of the most astonishing experiences of my life. You know, she even taught me for a while to blush. I've lost the ability since then. But my God, she really had such delicacy, such perception. She would say something, she would say all kinds of things that all of a sudden, I don't know. But she had, by the time this poem was written, Marion Moore had left Brooklyn and gone back to New York. You know, that's the twist there. Her relationship to the Dodgers are a little bit ambiguous from my heart. I don't know what, and there's a few little spots as we go along the way. You see, I'm only going to do one long poem because the rhetoricians tell you that you can only hold on for the first one, from then on your attention span will run down. So this is the only long poem I'm going to do this evening. My please have that attention span. But I have to make a few little spots along the way. You could work this out yourselves if you had a little more time. And a couple of spots, for instance, you know, you have Scylla and Charybdis. So in the first two lines, I don't know why I mussed that up. So why worry about it? I'll just do it the way I do it. Scheming to pick my way past Charybdis, or do I mean Celebdis, caught in the midst of being nearly over, not midway on the roadway of our life. You know, that's what I'm doing there. You know, mezzo del cammin di nostra vita, and that's the big line in Dante that I'm referring to there. A septuagenarian, valetudinarian, a 90 guy who was ailing, thrown into an airy osprey. Well, I should tell you about this place where we are. This we are over this whole thing. We were over this whole, this little build up that you might know it in the first place. We were up looking out over that bay. It's really one of the most marvelous spots in the world. But you'll find my terror of the whole situation that'll come through. But that is a most incredible place. It is the eighth miracle, although it's a lousy miracle. But to see that place. 4 o'clock in the morning, you wake up and there it is, bing, just raging, you know. So that's what I mean by that marvelous place we were there. With a view most spacious than every bit of it, our country's primal gateway even. Although, dear friends, I'd love to see you later, comparing notes, us comically telling one another just what we knew or thought we knew that others of us didn't, all told what fools we were, every last one of us. More fun than a BBL of monkeys. But what with being sick of wooing slumber, I'll settle gladly for oblivion. Second, weak hypochondriasis, it says here. Hell, I mean smile. The bell rang, I laid my text aside. The day begins in earnest. They have brought the mail. And now to age and ailments adds a 13-page single space type missive to start the new year right. On the first of two-faced January, quotes, the injuries you inflict upon me, persecution, such legal felonies, unremitting efforts, malice, rage, slander, conspiracy, your spitefulness. Just when I talked of getting through the narrows, no, I'm not so sure. Smile, hypochondriasis. Hell, I mean, wanly weep. Let's begin again. Crossing by I from Brooklyn to Manhattan. Maybe I forgot to tell you this is called I crossing from Brooklyn to Manhattan. I'm saying we can only cross by I because we're caught on this side. What we're going to do here, we have to do two things. We look across and we come back and look at things on this side in Brooklyn. You know, we go back and forth, those things. We all just look across. You know. Let's begin again. Crossing by I from Brooklyn to Manhattan. Waltz was a ferry crossing. Hearts by bridge. Now get that thing straight. I'm trying to build up three things here. Three stages, basically. I'm trying to build up the difference between the Whitman's sales talk and Hart's nostalgia and where we are now. I'm just trying to build a sequence that way. That's what I'm working on. So watch it. And that's the structure I'm building. Let's begin again, crossing by I from Brooklyn to Manhattan. Waltz was a ferry crossing, hearts by bridge. To those historic Primi Donai, I've made up a word there if you know. P-R-I-M-I-D-O-N-N-I, and I don't know how you make, what would be the masculine for Art and Walt then? I just figured out the best I could do with it. To those historic Primi Donai, P-R-I-M-I-D-O-N-N-I, nominated me and called me what you will. From Brooklyn, now deserted by both Marion Moore and the Dodgers. I forgot to tell you, this poem is dedicated to Marion Moore. And I crossing with me knocked cross-eyed or cock-eyed by a saddening, vexing letter from a dear friend gone sour. I think of a Pandora's box uncorked while I was trying to untie Laocoon's hydra-headed Gordian knot, entangled in a maze of Daedalus plus modern traffic jam, cum blackout. Let's begin again. The architectural piles, she's looking over from Brooklyn, looking at that goddamn stuff over there. The architectural piles, erections, impositions, monsters of high-powered real estate promotion, from a room high on Brooklyn Heights, the gaze is at the cross and up to those things' peaks, their arrogance. When measured by this scale of views from Brooklyn, they are as though deserted. When the boats whirring, I mean, you can't see anything, you know, and the boats whirring the harbor, they too are visibly deserted, smoothly and silent, moving in disparate directions, each is but yielding to a trend that bears it like sticks without volition, carried on the congeries of crossing currents. And void of human habitation, the cars on Mad Hatter's eastern driveway, formless as stars, speeding slowly, close by the feet of the goddamn mystic giants, a restlessness unending, back and forth. See this damn going all the time. Glimpses of a drive or drivenness from somewhere underneath the roots of reason. And I'd like to give you another line by popular request. I'm reading those lines over again. Glimpses of a drive or drivenness from somewhere underneath the roots of reason. Me looking west towards Manhattan, Newark. West, eye crossing, I have seen the sunrise gleaming in a splotch and splatter of western windows facing east. That gives me a chance for the next section. I'd like to give you a couple of things to prepare for here. I used the fact that B-E-H-E-M-O-T-H uses two accents. You can see either say behemoth or behemoth. And I use the word boustrophedon. Now I know many of you know boustrophedon and many of you don't, but I must admit a few years I didn't know boustrophedon. But boustrophedon comes from a word which comes from a boost is the ox and strophe the turn, and what it refers to is when the ox went to the end of the line and turned See, when you were plowing, you went back and forth. And the word was actually used for four kinds of language. You see, some go from right to left, some go from left to right. You see the difference between English and Hebrew or something. You get all these twists back and forth. Now I worked, so the next stanza works with that. East, see, we ended up there. I was looking west and seeing the east reflected. East, west, between USSR and USA, there behemoth and our behemoth, a dialogue of sorts, two damned ungainly beasts, threats to the entire human race's race, but for their measured dread of each the other, how give or get an honest answer. Forgive me for this booster feeding moods, going from left to right, then right to left, pulling the plow thus back and forth alternately, a digging of furrows, not in a field of plants, but on my own disgruntled stomach's forehead. God, begin again. See, I do these things, two sides. Some I'm doing on the side of Brooklyn, some I'm working over, looking over to New York, Manhattan. Turn back. Now just on this side. By keeping your wits about you, you can avoid the voidings. The dog signs scattered on the streets and sidewalks. You meet them face to feces. And everywhere the signs of people, you meet them face to face. The Waltman, with time and tide before him, he saw things face to face. He said so. Then there came a big blow. The pavements got scoured drastically. Exalted, I howled back into the teeth of the biting winds. Me in Klondike zeal, inhaling powdered dog dung. There's a new perversion. Now but an essence on the fitful gale. Still turning back, Sir Market, mock heroic confrontation at an interlude. I have used there, if you ask me why I call, use Sir Market as against supermarket. After all, they say surrealism is against superrealism, so I can't say Sir Market as against it. All right. So, all right, we've got now a confrontation of Bohatch and interloaders. This is a mock heroic confrontation. Near closing time, we're zeroing in. Ignatius Panallergicus. Panallergicus, huh? That's me. Allergic to everything? Panallergicus? No? Ignatius Panallergicus, that's me. His cart, but moderately filled, less than $5 buys the lot. He picks the likeliest cue and goes line up and waits, while for one shopper far ahead, the lady at the counter ticks off and tallies items enough to gorge a regiment. Then lo, a possibility not yet disclosed sets in. While Panallergicus stands waiting, next to the line, a further cart wheels up, whereat Ignatius Panallergicus, myself, unknowingly the very soul of troublous helpfulness suggests? It seems to me, my friend, you come out best on that line rather than on one of these. And so, let's call him Primus. Primus shifts. Development atop development. Up comes another, obviously subordinate. And to take his stand behind Ignatius, Sultan thought, no sooner had Secundus joined the line than he addressed Ignatius Panurge approximately this. Good neighbor, I'm trying to make this very realistic, you see. Good neighbor, of this temporary junction, pray guard my rights in this arrangement while I race off to get one further item. Then promptly left, and so things stood. But no, precisely now in mankind's pilgrimage, who suddenly decides to change his mind? But Primus, who, abandoning his other post, returns to enroll himself again in line behind Ignatius. Since to that end, he acts to shove aside Secundus' cart and cargo, crisis looms. uneasy, Panallergicus explains I'm sorry, but you see, I was entrusted, however, the preservation of, but no need protest further, for here is Secundus back and wrathful of his rights as ever epic hero of an epoch-making war. Both aging champions fall into a flurry of fishwife fury. Oh, to God, they start throwing the stuff out of their gut. All aging champions fall into a fishwife fury, even to such an emphatic extent that each begins to jettison the other's cargo, while the contestant's rage, pale Panurge, grins helplessly at others looking on. But Primus spots him in this very act and shouts for all to hear, it's all his fault! He was the one! He brought this all about! And Panurgicus now saw himself as others see him with a traitor's wiles. I spare the rest. There was much more to come. How an authority came swinging in, twisted Secundus' arm behind his back, and rushed him bumbling from the store. I tried to do a suggestion around about there, the bum's rush. How further consequences flowed in turn, I leave all that unsaid. And all is now, when edging towards the counter, his cargo in his cart, our Ignatius Panurge Roxisticus, he's got a new name now, he's been through. The Roxisticus comes from Roxism, is the psychological twist of gritting your teeth. Our Ignatius Panurge Roxisticus, gnashing his costly, poorly fitting dentures, feels all about his head a glowering, anti-glowing counter halo. I've done a job with counter halo there. Haven't I got the counter in it two ways? A halo, not with the counter, but you're around the counter there. Is that a millstone on the body's neck? No. It is but the pressing down of 60 plus 11 annual milestones. That's when I was only 71. I'm just a kid then, you know. It was before the damning letter came, and those good burgers also known of that. But now turn back from turning back. Begin again. Of a late fall evening, I walk on the Esplanade. I don't know if you know that place there. It's just this wildest thing in this spot. I can't build that up for you now. Looking across at the blaze of Walt's Mad Hatter, and north to Hart's Grateful Bridge, all lighted in a cold, fitful gale, I walked on the Esplanade in Brooklyn, now deserted by both Marianne and the Dodgers. Things seem spooky. 8 or 10 lone, wandering shapes, and all as afraid of me as I of them. We kept a wholesome distance from one another. Had you shrieked for help in that bluster, who'd have heard you? Me and my Alky in that cold, fitful bluster on the Esplanade that night, above the tears of the mumbling, unseen traffic. It was scary. It was ecstatic. Don't look that word up in the dictionary. Some decades earlier, before my pap, here's the twist in this fantastic thing, as far as I'm personally concerned in this thing. Here I was, near the end of the line, looking this way. But way back, by God, when I first came to New York, I was looking the other way, towards the east. And this twist comes in there. Some decades earlier, before my pap fell on evil days, we then were perched atop the Palisades, looking down upon the traffic heavings of the Hudson. I still remember Grandma there from Pittsburgh for a spell, watching the tiny tugs, the tug monsters, out of her inborn sweetness and memories of striving, putting all that together. Those poor little tugs, she'd say. God only knows what all she might be being sorry for. What if you sit that thing? She would sit up there watching those tugs pulling these boats around the harbor. She would just sit up, those poor little tugs. They were pulling all these big barges of stuff. Those poor little tugs. I think she was really, her whole life was behind that in a sort of way, is what I'm getting at there. And now repeatedly, we watch the tugs. Poor little tugs, and hear them. Over there in Brooklyn, we're on the other side. You can hear them. Their signals back and forth as though complaining. The two tugs help each other, tugging, pushing against the current in the place. They're getting this stuff back. A sluggish ship to be aligned along a dock, a bungling, bumbling, bulging, overladen freighter. Putting that thing in her thing. The task completed, the two tugs toot goodbye, go tripping on their way. Leaning as lightly forward as with a hiker suddenly divested of his knapsack, goodbye, rejoicingly, goodbye. Whereat, I wonder, might there also be a viable, albeit risky, way to toot? You should drive up and ask me. I think you damn near botched that job. I think you stink. What might comprise the total range and nature of tugboat tooting nomenclature? That's for our department. Profusion of confusion. No, wait, don't. No, I must do here. No, I must do here. To change the rhythm. To change the pace. Change the pace. A plunk, plunk, jukebox joint. Him hunched on a stool, peering beyond his drink at bottles lined up, variously pregnant. There's a gleaming for you. Among the gents, a scattering of trick floozies. Maybe they know or not just where they'll end come closing time. He'll be in a room alone, himself and his many mirrored other. It was a plunk plunk jukebox joint, its lights in shadow. Profusion of confusion. What of a tunnel crossing? What of by mail, phone, telegraph, or aircraft, or for that matter, hearse? You're in a subway car, hanging from a hook, and you would get relief? Here's all I have to offer. Sing out our national anthem loud and clear. And when in deference to the tune, the seated passengers arise, you quickly slip into whatever seat seems safest. I figured out this scheme, but never tried it. Problems pile up like the buildings. Even as I write, the highest to the left soars higher day by day. Now but the skeleton of itself, these things begin as people end. See what I mean there? I mean, you start, they start out with, they build a skeleton first, and they put all the stuff, first they put that basic structure on, and then they put all the stuff around it. So that's what I mean by saying, now with the skeleton of itself, it all that basic structure, and these things begin as people end. All night, its network of naked bulbs keeps flickering towards us here in Brooklyn. Then dying into dawn, or our what? Now, I'll confess to you, I that last line I put in, it doesn't make any sense, except I didn't say I could possibly say it without growling. Rawr, 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 what? Yeah. I put it in for that reason. Now the next one is an epic simile that falls apart. Yeah, that's time for that, isn't it? An epic simile with an aging literary man who, knowing that words see but within, yet finding himself impelled to build a poem that takes for generating for a startling view, a novel visual spaciousness, he asked himself, those who have not witnessed it, how tell them? And why tell them who have? Can you do more than say remember? I'm actually trying to say, if you haven't seen that damn thing from there, I can't tell you really what a fantastic vision that is from there, from Brooklyn, looking at that at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and just I don't know how to handle that. And as he learns the ceaseless march of one-time modulatings unique to this. Unique to this, out of eternity, this one-time combination of primal nature, Earth's, and urban technic, second nature, they're gleaming, towering, spreading out and up, there by the many-colored, changing colored water. Why all that burning all throughout the night? Some say because the cleaning women leave the lights lit, but no, it's the computers all night long now. They go on getting fed. I might bring in a spot there. Years ago, when I bought the flood bond, the first job I had, really, was a well-paying job when I was working down there, 61 Broadway. You could go out that place at night. You should stay, if you want to stay and work in your office. It was just like going out into a remote village. It was, my God, that place is just simply blazing all night now. What's the difference? Just what I said. It's the computers being fed. They've got to keep those animals fed. They've got to do it. Such a man may ask himself and try. As such a one, knowing that words see but inside, and only repeated through the day or night, the flash of ambulance or park patrol car, wondering, is a ticket this time, or wreck, or maybe setting up conditions there that helicopters land with greater safety. So puzzling eye crossing, and find myself repeating and hear the words of a now dead, once Olympian leper. Intelligence is an accident. Genius is a catastrophe. That's the one. Thank God it's not mine. I saw that's it. So, a jumble of towering tombstones, hollowed, not hallowed, and in the night incandescent, striving ever to outstretch one another, like the stalks, the weeds dry brittle in the fall. Or is it a mighty pack of mausoleums, or powerhouses of decay and death, towards the poisoning of our soil, our streams, the air, roots of unhappy wars abroad, miraculous medicine amassing beyond imagination, the means of pestilence, madly wasteful journeys to the moon? Why go at all except to show you can get back? I recall the wanly winged words of a now dead gracious leper. My own words tangle like our entangled ways of hoping to stave off destruction by piling up magic mountains of destructiveness. Do I foresee the day? Calling his counselors and medicos, do I foresee a day when Unus Thorium is one of many? World ruler absolute, and yet the august hope is wearing out. Do I foresee such time? Calling his counselors and medicos together, that lad who won the race so valiantly, he tells them, and his word is law. I like that bright lad's kidneys, and either honor him by changing his with mine, or find some others for him as opportunity office. No sooner said than done, thus once again the state is rescued. And Unus overall drags on till next time. Do I foresee that day while gazing across as though that realm were alien? For fending of my prayer, that if and when such things should be, those from here silent monsters over there will have by then gone crumpled into rubble, and nothing all abroad, but ancient Egypt's pyramidal piles of empire building hierarchical stylized dumb remains. Oh, I have haggled nearly 60 years. In all the 70s, I've moved along my country. Oh, as my aimless ending nears, oh dear, my country, may I be proved wrong. Now, I have two stanzas here, one on Whitman and one on Hart, and then the final. The quotations in the Whitman are from his crossing book, his friend. I crossing, I had set the harbor space, so sets it up, in Walt's ferry crossing, beside the jumble of things seen, they leave him disintegrated. Even the sheer words, see, sight, look, and watch, add up to 33. I think that's a dirty trick. I'm not sure. I'm afraid to try it again. Anyhow, the number of a major mythic crucified. I don't know. I think it does add up to that. I haven't checked it again, but you get the idea. Anyhow, 33. The number of a major mythic crucifying. In the last section of the Walkman's testimony, there is but gaze, and through a necessary film yet. Gaze as though glazed, it's not unlikely. Suspend, he says, here and elsewhere, an eternal float of solution, and the talk is of appearances that envelop the soul, no quotes. Between this culminating ritual translation and the sheer recordings of the senses, there had been intermediate thoughts of looking forward to later generations looking back. Walt, the visionary, prophetically seeing crowds of cronies crossing and recrossing on the ferry that itself no longer crosses. There's a vision for you. Six is the problematic section. There he takes it easy, cataloging all his vices as though basking on a comfortable beach. That's a wonderful trick, actually. Here his tricks of ideal democratic promiscuity include his tricks of ideal man love. In section six, he does a sliding that makes him feel good. Blandly blind to the promotion of racket stirring already all about him. Blandly blinding to the promotion of racket already all about him. He quotes, bathed in the waters without reference to their imminent defiling. Now even a single one of the many monsters since accumulated could contaminate the stream for miles. He sang as though we're all his. A continent to give away for kicks. And such crisscrossing made him feel pretty goddamn good. Flow on, filthy river, ebbing with flood tide and with ebb tide flooding. Stand up, you feelingless erections. Fly on, O flight, be it to fly or flee. Thrive, cancerous cities, load the once lovely streams with the clogged filter of your filth. Expand even to the moon and beyond, yet there is perfection in you in the sense that even empire plunder can't corrupt entirely. Now I go to, that's the end of the Whitman, now I go to the Hart Crane one. I'd hear the twist between idealistic and realistic. And went to Hart's Crossing by the bridge. In violent curve, he says, who brought that up? The tribute gets its maturing in the penultimate stanza, under thy shadow by the piers I waited. Hart too was looking. But things have moved on since the days of Walt, and Hart is tunnel conscious. Fittingly, the subway stop at Wall Street, first station on the other side, gets named in the middle quatrain of the poem. Wall is fate-laden as Jericho, or now as Mad Madison or Magic Mad Hatter Island. Ah! Ache! Hart lets you take your pick, prayer and paria, and the lover's cry. Here's the alternative. If crossing now on Brooklyn Bridge by car, be sure your tires are sound, for if one blows, you must keep right on riding on the rim. That's how it sets up now with what Hart calls a curve ship. Lent is a myth to God. I speak in the light of subsequent developments. Elsewhere, the last bear shot drinking in the Dakotas, Hart's thoughts having gone beneath the river by tunnel, and from tunnel into fields, whereat iron strives the dew. Hart saw the glory turning to decay, albeit euphemized in terms of time's rendings, and by his rules, sliding from Hudson to the Mississippi, he could end on a tongued meeting of river there and gulf, a passion with hosannas silently below. All told, though Walt was promissory, Hart was nostalgic. Hart was future loving only insofar as driven by his need to hunt the heart. And as for me, an apprehensive hoosis, I am still talking of a crossing on a river. And I might say here that the reference to the thing here is to do with the first time when they went around the moon, before they ever set foot on the moon. I'm still talking of a crossing on a river when three men have jumped over the moon, a project we are told computer-wise involving the social labor of 300,000 specialists and 20,000 businesses. Such are the signs one necessarily sees gleaming across the water, the lights cutting clean all through the crisp winter nights. Oh, ego, the pity of it, ego. That's my most ambitious pun. Oh, Iago, the pity of it, Iago. Oh, ego, the pity of it, ego. Malice, slander, conspiracy, the letter had said, you're spiteful. Crossing? Just as the roads get jammed that lead each weekday morning from Long Island to Manhattan, so the roads get jammed that lead that evening from Manhattan to Long Island. And many's the driver that crosses cursing. Meanwhile, lo, the vista viewing from our windows at burning nightfall. The left, the scattered lights on the water, hazing into the shore in Jersey on the horizon. To the right, the cardboard stage set of the blazing buildings, which is to say, the left, me looking west, the looking up. It is with the lights in the harbor, it was stars in the sky, just lights, pure of human filth. Or is it? To the right, the towerings of lower Manhattan, ablaze at our windows, as though the town were a catastrophe, as doubtless it is.